On today's Innovative Ideas podcast, we'll be talking to Dr. David Graetzer, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a physician in private practice in Canada. Dr. Graetzer is also the author of The Cure, How Capitalism Can Save American Healthcare. David, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
A pleasure as always to join you.
David, you've got a terrific new pamphlet out, and I'll call it a pamphlet because it's relatively short. It's only about 40 pages. In the tradition of Thomas Paine's Common Sense, it's called Why Obama's Government Takeover of Healthcare Will Be a Disaster. We're reaching, I think, a critical juncture in the healthcare debate with important votes due in the House of Representatives, perhaps as soon as Saturday, perhaps sometime next week, and then in the Senate, perhaps later this month, perhaps in December. But where we are today, much of the debate over healthcare reform begins with this central premise that America is an ideological backwater when it comes to healthcare. Other countries have solved their healthcare problems by adapting or adopting either single-payer systems or simply universal government-controlled coverage schemes. But the U.S. just stubbornly clings to its private healthcare system. You talk a lot about the U.S. and its relation or the system's relationship to places like the U.K. and Canada in your broadside here. What is the reality of healthcare in countries like the U.K. and Canada that American voters need to understand?
There is no magic solution to the problems of the United States to be found north of the 49th parallel or in some Western European system. It is true that some of these countries spend less on healthcare, some of them spend much less than healthcare, and yet the way they've gone about doing that is rationing care. Everything is free, nothing is readily available. One, you mentioned Canada, as you know, I was born and raised in Canada. I have a medical license there, as I do in the United States. There, people wait for care. Sylvia DeVries is an example of a woman who's been much in the news because she's fighting the government to pay back the cost of her care in the United States. This Ontario woman had a 40-pound fluid-filled tumor in her abdomen, and she couldn't get in to see a surgeon in Canada. She crossed the border, and a surgeon saw her and operated almost right away, figuring she's a week or two from death. She's applied to the government to reimburse her. In some extraordinary cases, they'll do that, but they won't for her because they argue that literally on her deathbed with 40-pound tumor in her gut, she didn't fill out the proper paperwork. Now, some people turn around and say that's just one story and overall quality is pretty good in Canada. You can find sensational stories anywhere. But if you look across the border, one finds huge waits for care. I'll pick government statistics, not my statistics, not some right-wing think tank statistics. In Alberta, the wealthiest province in the country, 50% of outpatients waited more than 41 days for an MRI. In Saskatchewan, 10% of patients awaiting a knee replacement surgery waited more than 616 days or longer. Again, these are government statistics. And it is an impact on quality and the care people get. Just one more point. When you look at the joint Canada-U.S. survey of health, you find that Americans have better access to care with chronic illness. They get more preventive procedures done. And on top of everything, poor people relative to rich people do better in the United States than they do in Canada. So, you know, Americans are very defensive of their system. There was a great article recently by Christoph in the New York Times explaining how much better care is in Canada than the rest of the world. It's just not true. It is true if you look at crude outcomes like life expectancy, much more related to smoking rates and so on, than Americans fare less well. But when you look at head-to-head comparisons in terms of quality of care, Americans do better because they don't have the wait list one sees elsewhere.
It's got to be very hard for, you know, the average American voter, or even an educated person who's following the healthcare debate, to parse out everything that's going on in Washington. We've got a Senate bill that's running over 1,000 pages, a House bill on healthcare reform, the Democrats' House bill, that's pushing 2,000 pages. What are the core principles at work in these bills that we need to be aware of and that you think are the most important touch points?
Paul, there's so much going on in terms of details that it's difficult for people like you and me to keep track. But maybe people don't need to be so enmeshed in details and worry about what's being amended today in the House and what might be voted on tomorrow or next week. There's a fork in the road. And there are some people who look at American healthcare and they say, look, the system doesn't work so well. Quality is uneven. Costs continue to rise. And what we ought to do then is turn decisions over to people in Washington. And they're going to decide what's a good treatment for certain medical conditions, and they're going to decide on more reimbursement rates, and they're going to decide on what should be in a basic insurance package. And they say, look, that's what other countries have done. And there are some people, like myself, who look at this fork in the road and suggest the path not taken, which is to say, look, in 5/6 of the general economy, we value individual choice and competition. Costs fall with time, value rises, and people are generally happy. That's what we ought to do with healthcare. When you're looking at the bills before discussion in Washington, what's been inked in the House and what we'll probably voted on shortly, what is about to be inked on the Senate side, it's all about increasing Washington's role. Some of the big ideas as part of Obamacare, one is the health insurance exchange, where you'd have a government committee decide what was a basic insurance policy. Already on the House side, it's including things like foot specialist consults and the like. You see ideas like a public option where you would have a Medicare-style plan competing against private insurance, except the Medicare-style plan would be price-controlled and thus have an unfair advantage. And a big idea as well is some type of a government committee to steer healthcare towards better decision-making. On the Senate side and on the House side, they talk about some sort of an independent Medicare advisory commission or something of the sort, where instead of your decision being between you and your doctor, it would be between you, your doctor, and a really savvy, smart bureaucrat in D.C. All of those decisions are about taking power away from individuals and from doctors and wrestling control and plopping it down in Washington. But the problem is, in every other country that's attempted this, in the country of my birth, Britain, in Holland, and Sweden, one finds that those decisions just end up making people wait for care and sometimes cases dying for the care they need.
It's also, as you put it out, there's this relentless, in some cases, negativism about American healthcare, and it's easy to look at the obvious problems in the system, but there are also a lot of successes to point to, and I know that you've written a lot about cancer care in the U.S. and successes in reducing cardiovascular mortality rates. Could you talk about those for just a few minutes, about what the strengths of the American system are that benefit not just American patients, but patients around the globe?
In my new broadside, I spend at least a third of it talking about what's wrong with American healthcare and what's to be done. So let me emphasize that I fundamentally believe that there are problems with the American system and they have to be addressed. But when we're trying to get the diagnosis right, we can't forget the strength of the patient and his qualities therein. American healthcare has great things about it. Again, I'm not trying to minimize some of the huge problems, such as with the uninsured, but let's not forget that when you compare American healthcare to the rest of the world, you find that Americans have better cancer outcomes than people in other countries when you're looking at five-year cancer survival rates, when you're looking at success stories in terms of kidney transplantation and the like. America's a leader. When you're looking at just overall innovation, I mean, Americans have received the Nobel Prize in medicine more than all other nationalities put together. When Health Affairs asked internists across North America to rate the 10 biggest innovations in the quality, 10 biggest innovations in the treatment of patients in the 20th century, 7.5 of those innovations were invented by Americans. So there are tremendously good things about the United States and about American healthcare. And as we're striving to reform the system, we're addressing the issues of the uninsured and the uneven quality. We shouldn't get lost and forget what's good and end up losing that too, which I think, unfortunately, one would see with a massive expansion of the reach of Washington and Washington bureaucracy.
Right. And I think that you and I, in our discussions, we would agree. There are some things that we'd agree with the president and the Democrats about, or that any observer would say about the problems in American healthcare: the number of uninsured, the uneven, sometimes, quality of healthcare, and lack of transparency in the system. So taking as a touch point those common criticisms I think many good observers, or at least observers of good faith, will make about the system, what do you think are the right prescriptions for reform that we ought to be pursuing instead of increasing government's reach in healthcare markets?
At the end of the pamphlet, I talk about some simple ideas that wouldn't cost very much money but would make a big difference. A couple of ideas just to make mention of right now. We ought to foster competition. Healthcare is the most regulated sector of the economy. And the result is that basic health insurance policy can cost staggering amounts of money in places like New York State. As you know, for a basic policy for a 30-year-old man, you'll pay roughly 3 or 4 times more than you would pay in the individual market in Connecticut. And yet, Americans can't shop out of state for a health insurance policy the way they could for a mortgage. I would foster competition, and one of the things I do is allow people to buy out of state. I would directly help the uninsured. Right now, federal and state governments spend roughly $40 to $50 billion a year on uncompensated care. And yet, instead of directly helping people out, they spend it on a vast hospital bureaucracy. Not unlike welfare was in the 1980s, where much money is spent, but actually gets soaked up with this bureaucracy and doesn't really reach the people it's intended to help. I'd turn that money over to the state and let them innovate. I'd work hard to increase transparency. We need more health information available. You've seen some experiments in the public sector, like New Jersey, publishing cardiac mortality rates, cardiac surgery mortality rates. You've seen it somewhat in the private sector with LeapFrog Group. But I think the federal government could really foster that, amongst other things, by releasing Medicare data. These are the sorts of things that I think would be important. And, of course, two more points that I don't think get enough attention in the corridors of power these days. I'd end defensive medicine with tort reform, and I'd better America's health by focusing not just on health care, but also on health.
So, of course, naturally and rightly, we're very concerned about the health care debate in the U.S. And the direction it might go in the next few weeks or few months. But there are trends around the globe that I think you've written about in other places, which you mentioned towards the end of your broadside here, that are counter to the trends. Americans, politicians seem to be running one way, but the rest of the globe in some ways is starting to liberalize its healthcare arrangements. Do you think that that's a reason for optimism in the long run, or at least the medium to long run, about the direction that we can take?
Let me just quickly make two points of what you said. Right across the Western world, outside the United States, there are two realizations that have occurred that are quite striking. One is that you'll only go so far with central planning and cost control. If you look at OECD data, average real annual growth rates for health spending, you'll find that the average for 2006 is 4.9%. In the United States, it was basically that. So right across the Western world, there's a struggle with rising costs, and where decisions have been centralized, in fact, you tend not to save very much money. The other thing that has been widely accepted from Stockholm to Saskatoon is that there's a role for the private sector, and you're seeing experiments that 20 years ago no one would have talked about. A largest hospital in Stockholm is run privately in Canada. Private clinic opens at a rate of about one a week, according to the New York Times. So huge changes occurring right across the Western world because there's a realization that a one-size-fits-all socialized model is just not going to work with healthcare. Does that give me reason to be optimistic about the United States? This debate is very young. I'm not sure what's going to happen in terms of the Pelosi bill or the Reid bills. Certainly, it's possible that something could be passed. But look at the CBO scoring. It suggests that if Baucus's light bill was passed, health costs would still grow about 8% in the next number of years. There are fundamental changes that need to be taken and made, and I don't think any of that's being discussed in Washington. So we might pass Obamacare, we might not pass it. I think that fundamental debate simply continues.
Well, that's a terrific point to end our discussion on. Thanks very much for joining us today.
An absolute pleasure as always, Paul, and I appreciate the good work that you do.
Thank you very much. And for listeners who are interested in getting David's new broadside pamphlet, Why Obama's Government Takeover of Healthcare Will Be a Disaster, it's available on Amazon.com, and a portion of it will be available on the Manhattan Institute's website, www.manhattan-institute.org.